This recording is a service of the Allen County Public Library's audio reading service. It is specifically designed for and directed to people who have visual, physical, learning, or language challenges to reading traditional printed materials.
Podcast of Audio Reading Service volunteers reading the Journal Gazette is provided by the Allen County Public Library for the sight and print impaired and made available with the permission and cooperation of the Journal Gazette.
We're back from our break. We're reading the Living section from the Tuesday, April 16th Journal Gazette, and here's Mary with the horoscopes.
Here are the horoscopes for today, written by Holiday Mathis. For Aries, you'll do the impossible. You'll rebel against conventional wisdom, question assumptions, and explore unfamiliar territories, all without arousing suspicion or even ruffling a single feather. The world needs your influence. For Taurus, there's no need for shields among comrades. What sparks the defense? Examine the threat's validity. You can't defend and attack from the same side. Figure out who you can trust, and then give it wholeheartedly, or progress will be thwarted. For Gemini, your stars shine with beams of straightforward focus now, more laser than radiant bloom. Take advantage of this gift of cosmic cognition by prioritizing simplicity. Revamp your systems. Streamline for efficiency. For Cancer, obligations take priority. The tasks themselves may be tolerable, even enjoyable, yet the fact of their compulsory nature dims the allure. This is the weight of duty. It's also why you should consider it your duty to schedule a vacation. For Leo, you know what you want and you have a plan. Leave some room to change or evolve the strategy, but not too much. As the gymnasts know, flexibility keeps the routine fluid, but you need more than that to stick the landing. For Virgo, from the outside, it might look as though you're zoning out, but you're actually zoning in. You have a talent for choosing the right problem to work on and tuning out the world so you can focus deeply. Solutions are at hand. For Libra, change will whisper before it roars. You'll sense the shift before you know where it's going. Even though you're optimistic about the progress, it's normal to experience the uneasy sort of anticipation as you predict and prepare. For Scorpio, you're forming a new habit, likely by accident, which is how most habits get formed. Keeping track of your day will bring awareness to the grooves you're making so you can decide how they match with the future you that you are building. For Sagittarius, arriving at a solution on the first try is very rare. Even when it occurs, the solution is seldom as stellar as the ones that evolve through rounds and rounds of iteration. Keep the discussion going. For Capricorn, everyone has some form of an Achilles heel. Sometimes you feel like your entire emotional body is made of vulnerability, and that's okay too. The awareness of weakness is a strength and your first step in self-protection. For Aquarius, you expect more of yourself than the others are expecting of you. Don't fret about having all the answers. What's important is to be in the game, observing and learning the best questions. For Pisces, confidence isn't a good measure of effectiveness. Those who know just enough to be dangerous strut around like peacocks, while the truly knowledgeable shrink like violets in their shadow. seek evidence of achievement and true character. For today's birthday, poised on the cusp of a new incarnation, your solar return whisks you into the swirl of change. It starts with one new friend, opening a circle of warm support to you, and continues with an expanded network and multiple income sources. More highlights: a promotion, the band playing just for you, and three felicitous encounters. Sagittarius and Capricorn adore you. Your lucky numbers are 2, 10, 15, 21, and 14.
This is today's Heloise article titled Reusing Containers for Storage. Dear Heloise, because I live alone and don't have to cook much, I eat a lot of frozen, healthy meals. I save the plastic containers after I clean them and use them as various storage containers in my bathroom and home office. They're great for lipstick and makeup brushes, and they can be stored in drawers or cupboards and easily keep counters and desktops clear. And that's from Caroline Reed of Bakersfield, California. Dear readers, you might occasionally come across a recipe that calls for liquor. If you do not have any on hand, here are a few things you can substitute it for instead. Non-alcoholic beer or wine may be used in its place. For fruity dessert recipes, you can often substitute liquor with the juice of apples, oranges, pineapple, and possibly lemon. You can also try adding a few drops of rum or brandy extract to water to equal the amount you needed in your recipe. And that's from Heloise. Dear Heloise, in your column, I've read several cures for mice in the home. When we were building our home, my brother-in-law told me to get steel wool, and while using a screwdriver to push it around all the pipes or any other kind of hole. We built our home in 1977 and have never seen a mouse. And that's from Patty Shin of Huntsville, Arkansas. Dear Heloise, we often buy the super large bottles of detergent and fabric softener at our local big box store, but they're hard for me to manage when doing laundry. So I bought condiment squeeze bottles for each product. Now they're so much easier to use. They weigh much less and I can control the amount of liquid I need. Plus the bottles don't need a refill very often. And that's from F in Colorado. Dear Heloise, we have a secret family password, so when the kidnapping scam happened to us, we asked the caller for the password. They immediately hung up after incorrectly guessing. Also, this is a good idea for children to use if they're ever approached by an unknown person. And that's from Kay Krausman via email. Dear Heloise, like Jim R. from Houston, I also save the cold water that runs first in the shower as I wait for the warm water to arrive. I also use this water to flush the toilet. And that's from Richard Evans in Houston. Dear Heloise, my husband and our three boys love to restore cars, so they usually come into the house with hands covered in dark grease and dirt. They would wash their hands with a heavy-duty cleaner, but it stripped all the natural oil from their skin and never really worked too well. A friend of mine suggested using mayonnaise, and it worked even better than most other cleaners. It's cheap and easy to use, and we always have a jar of it in the refrigerator. And that's from DC in Las Vegas.
Next is today's Ask Amy column. This is written by Amy Dickinson. Dear Amy, I am a sophomore in college. My girlfriend and I met on campus at the beginning of the school year and have been together for 6 months. We are both women. We're making plans for this summer. We're both looking into working at a beach resort near our college. Every summer, I go to a reunion at my summer camp. This is a camp I went to for most of my childhood and through my teens. I was a counselor there for 3 years. The reunion week is a time when we former campers go back to camp to perform some maintenance tasks and help to prepare the camp for the summer. I really enjoy doing this work, and I like seeing my fellow campers and staff. It's a really special experience for me. My girlfriend is having a tough time with my decision to take this week away this summer. She says she will miss me too much, and she is heavily hinting that I shouldn't do it, I'm wondering what you think. Signed, Camper for Life. And Amy's response is, Dear Camper, I think your girlfriend is really into you. I also think she is trying to manipulate and control you. A week apart can seem like a very long time when you are in the first throes of attachment, but that's the way it goes. Your girlfriend should not pressure you to forego something that is so important to you. This is part of your life, and your attachment, service, and commitment to this place and these people is an important part of who you are. A person who loves and respects you should, on some level, also celebrate this aspect of your life and character. This is a bit of a test of your girlfriend's maturity, sense of perspective, and her overall respect for you. So far, she's failing. If she really pours on the pressure for you to drop this week-long commitment, then you should consider taking a vacation from this relationship. Do not cave. And the second letter in today's column to Amy is, Dear Amy, tired boyfriend reported that his girlfriend, Chrissy, had quit her job and now only wants to be a stay-at-home girlfriend. You missed the most obvious point. Chrissy is clinically depressed. Your response, which was, we all want to be a stay-at-home girlfriend, but life doesn't work that way, was heartless. Signed, Upset Reader. And Amy responds, Dear Upset, I'm not a clinician and would never attempt to diagnose anyone based on a shred of subjective information. You probably shouldn't do that either.
This is the To Your Good Health column by Dr. Keith Roach. Today's is titled, Low Iron Might Be Aggravating Blood Donor's Depression. Dear Dr. Roach, I am wondering if there is any link between low iron and depression or anxiety. I am a 37-year-old woman, and I started taking Lexapro a few years ago. I upped my dose last year because I wasn't feeling great, and my doctor and I decided that it was a good step to take. During the years that I have been taking Lexapro, I have also been a regular blood donor. I am CMV negative, so I have blood suitable for newborns. The Red Cross says I'm a hero for babies, and I enjoy doing something good. I haven't donated in about 5 months, and I'm feeling significantly better regarding my depression. I know that donating blood affects iron levels, but does it also affect the concentration of the Lexapro in my body? If not, can low iron be contributing to my depression? And that's from JM. And the doctor's response is, first off, thank you for donating so regularly. CMV is a virus most people have been exposed to, and like most herpes viruses, it stays in the body forever. Newborns and premature babies, as well as organ transplant recipients, need CMV-negative blood, and there aren't many CMV-negative people who can donate. Depression and anxiety are both tightly linked to the neurotransmitter serotonin. Lexapro doesn't increase serotonin, but it does make the transmission of serotonin from one nerve cell to another more effective by reducing the reuptake of serotonin at the nerve junction. Low iron levels have been shown to reduce serotonin levels, so this may be part of why your depressive symptoms have been worse. However, there are many reasons, both inside and outside of your body, that can make depressive symptoms worse. Still, if you do have low iron levels, you can replace iron faster and keep it normal despite blood donation and menstruation with an iron supplement. It would be best to check on this with your doctor. If your depression then gets better, this would be pretty good evidence that the low iron does affect your mood. Note, you can have low iron and not have an anemia at all. Find the right donation frequency so you can still help without putting your mental health in danger.
Bear, lead actor White to star in Springsteen biopic. The buzzy upcoming Bruce Springsteen film, Deliver Me From Nowhere, officially has its lead, Jeremy Allen White. The biopic, based on the book of the same title by Warren Zanes, follows the making of Springsteen's 1982 iconic solo album, Nebraska. White, star of Hulu's Emmy-winning drama comedy, The Bear, will play the young, moody Springsteen. He'll wrap up filming for season 4 of The Bear in June before heading to New Jersey to shoot Deliver Me From Nowhere this fall. The Boss wrote and recorded Nebraska alone in a room he rented in Colts Neck, New Jersey, as he grappled with fame, depression, and anxiety. Though he initially didn't plan to release the tracks, they are still considered some of the most resonant and emotional songs of his career. Springsteen and his manager, John Landau, are involved with Deliver Me From Nowhere, which will also reportedly feature songs from The River and Born in the USA. Zane's book covers Springsteen's mental health troubles, and the personal struggles he wrote into Nebraska. Scott Cooper, known for directing The Pale Blue Eye, Black Mass, and Crazy Heart, another adaptation based on the musician's life, will write the adapted script and direct. Oscars taking early bow in 2025. The 97th Academy Awards will be held March 2, 2025, the Academy of Motion Pictures Arts and Sciences has announced. That moves the annual ceremony up about a week. This year's Oscars were held March 10th. The telecast, which culminated in the Best Picture win for Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer, was watched by an estimated 19.5 million people, up about 4% from last year. The Film Academy is also sticking with an earlier start for the awards. Like this year's show, the Oscars will kick off at 7 p.m. Eastern Time. ABC will again air the Academy Awards. The Golden Globes, after signing a 5-year deal with CBS, recently set January 5th as the date for next year's ceremony.
CBS ending Talk in December. The Talk is ending its long-running daytime conversation. The CBS Talk show will end in December after 15 seasons, the network announced Friday. The Talk was created by actor Sarah Gilbert with the idea of a group of female hosts speaking about hot topics and current events, much like ABC's The View. The show debuted in 2010 with hosts Gilbert, Sharon Osbourne, Julie Chen, Leah Remini, and Holly Robinson-Pete. The Talk would go on to have a number of hosting changes over its run. Current hosts are Cheryl Underwood, Natalie Morales, Amanda Kloots, Jerry O'Connell, and Akbar Gabayabiamila. The 11-time Daytime Emmy winner is airing its 14th season, which will end in June. Its final 15th season will premiere in the fall. Cirque to close Beatles' love show. The final curtain will come down this summer on Cirque du Soleil's long-running show, The Beatles' Love, a cultural icon on the Las Vegas Strip that brought band members Paul McCartney and Ringo Starr back together for public appearances throughout its 18-year run. Cirque announced last week that the show housed at the Mirage will end July 7th, part of the iconic Hotel Casino's major renovation plan to rebrand itself into the Hard Rock Las Vegas. Stéphane Lefebvre, CEO of the Cirque du Soleil Entertainment Group, said in a statement that more than 11.5 million people have seen the show, an energetic portrayal of the Fab Four's history and music with aerial stunts and whimsical dance numbers on a colorful 360-degree stage. And Tyler regains voice, Aerosmith tour on. Don't want to miss a thing from Aerosmith's farewell tour? The rock group's fans are in luck. Aerosmith announced last week that its Peace Out tour is officially back on with an updated slate of shows set to kick off in September. The rock group's tour launched early last September, but was quickly put on hold after frontman Steven Tyler injured his vocal cords. Less than a month into its Peace Out circuit, Aerosmith announced in a September 2023 statement that Tyler's injury, a fractured larynx, was more serious than initially thought. As a result, the group said it would postpone its remaining stops until 2024. The Grammy-winning Dream On group will relaunch the remainder of its tour September 20th. The tour includes a stop January 16th in Indianapolis. We will now read editorials for Tuesday, April 16th. The opinions expressed are those of the writers and not necessarily the opinions of the Audio Reading Service, the Allen County Public Library, Northeast Indiana Public Radio, PBS Fort Wayne, or your readers, Anita or
Mary. We'll start with a letter to the editor from John Christensen of Fort Wayne. Sharon Tucker should be the next mayor of Fort Wayne. While the office of the mayor may be the tip of the spear, the strength and breadth of its impact is completely contingent on the mayor's ability to bring conflicting goals together through collaboration and cooperation. In every aspect of my interaction and observation of Sharon personally and professionally, there is no one more effective at these strategic bridge-building skills. She masterfully finds common ground and shared interests while clarifying roles and responsibilities so action happens and results are measured. At the same time, she enters every room with clarity and honesty, understanding that differing expectations are the mother of all disappointments. It is no coincidence that her district is enjoying plentiful and strategic investment for a comprehensive success story without any chest-thumping, arm-twisting, or political credit-stealing from Sharon. She has masterfully influenced the process from within, creating an ongoing impact while generously sharing ownership of the results. Fort Wayne still has a lot of room to grow. Our future is not as simple as just continuing Mayor Tom Henry's plan. Sharon already has the necessary trusted relationships with key players inside and outside of government. Better still, she knows how to lean hard into the collaboration and cooperation needed to identify and implement new solutions. Sharon is exactly what Fort Wayne needs right now to fully leverage our potential as a growing economy without missing a beat or wasting a moment. She has the connections, energy, discipline, and vision to lead the way. And that letter to the editor was from John Christensen in Fort Wayne. Next is a short letter to the editor from Bill McAvoy in Fort Wayne. How to solve the jail problem? Simple. Make the jail a jail again. No conditioned air. Trash pickup on the side of the roads. If they have more talents, let them use them to earn time off. Unlimited labor hours for all city departments. Problem solved? And that letter was from Bill McAvoy of Fort Wayne.
Finishing up with two more letters to the editor. The first one, Israel's overreaction. The attack by Hamas on Israel was despicable, but Israel's response was as if your neighbor's dog bit your child, so you burned down your neighbor's house and impeded anyone from giving them aid. And that's from Ed Powers of Roanoke. Evaluate alcohol intake for maximum enjoyment. April is Alcohol Awareness Month, a time to think about your consumption to ensure you are enjoying alcohol responsibly and in moderation. According to Dietary Guidelines for Americans, this means limiting alcohol to 2 drinks or fewer a day for men and 1 drink or less for women. While any alcohol abuse is too much, the good news is federal data indicate harmful drinking in the U.S. is declining. The National Survey on Drug Use and Health shows binge drinking among adults ages 21 and older decreased 11% from 2018 to 2022, and 89% say they drink the same amount or less than they did pre-pandemic. Adults who choose to drink should commit to mindful drinking year-round. There are some people who should not drink alcohol at all, and talking with healthcare providers can help determine what is best based on individual factors and family history. And that's from Amanda Berger of the Distilled Spirits Council. If you are interested in election letters, letters pertaining to the May 7th primary election must be received by noon on April 29th to be considered for publication.
Next is an article titled, Into the Void, Seven Democrats Offer Vision to Fulfill Henry's Term. The city's next mayor will be decided by 98 Fort Wayne residents of one political party. At 10:30 a.m. Saturday, the Allen County Democratic Party's precinct chairs will gather at the Lincoln Financial Event Center at Parkview Field to decide who will finish the term of former Mayor Tom Henry, who died March 28th. Though the greater public will not have a chance to vote, this caucus is about as grassroots and democratic as possible. The same rules would apply to the GOP if the mayor had been a Republican. Precinct leaders are the lowest rung of any political party's organizational ladder. That isn't meant to sound negative. These are your neighbors. These are the people who build relationships between public office holders and voters. Currently, 41 chairs were elected. The rest were appointed to fill the posts they hold. To his credit, party chairman Derek Camp put a moratorium on appointing precinct chairs immediately after Henry announced his illness on February 26th, seeking to avoid any hint of stacking voters for any particular candidate. There has not been an appointment since at least January. The candidates will gather for a town hall at Purdue Fort Wayne's Walb Student Union on Thursday. Those seeking the position are at-large city councilwoman Michelle Chambers, Director of Intergovernmental Affairs Stephanie Crandall, educator George Fernandez, former community liaison Palmerno Galindo, state representative Phil Giaquinta, Wayne Township trustee Austin Knox, and 6th District City Councilwoman Sharon Tucker. What is striking about this group of candidates is their diversity in terms of gender, race, and professional backgrounds. It's a testament to advancing Voices of Women, or AVOW, and its goals that alums Chambers, Crandall, and Tucker are highly regarded candidates for the city's highest office. The winner has enormous shoes to fill to complete this term and can expect a bruising battle of a mayoral race in 2027. The new mayor does not walk in with a mandate from the people, but a party's support. If the results are close, the next leader may spend the next 3 years closing fissures. Saturday is just the start. And that meeting is the Democratic Party Mayoral Vacancy Candidate Town Hall, from 6 to 8 p.m. on Thursday in the Classic Ballroom at Walb Student Union, Union Circle Drive on Purdue Fort Wayne campus. And related to this is a political cartoon in today's paper by Greg Bender, and it's referring to that filling the void of Mayor Henry's term. There are two giant shoes, and one of them is listed as Tom Henry. And in those big shoes to fill are the seven candidates to complete that mayoral term. And on the wall is a sign pointing to the mayoral caucus vote.
State embraces roundabout path to traffic safety. In December, city officials opened Fort Wayne's 8th roundabout at East Ludwig Road and Oakbrook Parkway. More are planned, one at West Main Street and Leesburg Road next year, another at Goshen and Butler Roads in 2026, and a third at Broadway and Taylor Street in 2027. Since 2014, more cities across the country have embraced replacing intersection stops with circular junctions, particularly those in Indiana. The state has 663 roundabouts, fifth highest in the country, and half were built within the past decade, according to the Roundabouts Database compiled for the Transportation Research Board. It's well known that roundabouts are safer and more efficient than intersections with traffic lights and stop signs, said Pramothis Saja, assistant professor of civil engineering at Purdue Fort Wayne. They reduce crashes by about 40% overall, injury crashes by about 44%, and fatal crashes by 70%, he told the Journal Gazette. They are definitely the way to go as soon as possible, and Indiana is taking the lead. Indeed, the Indiana Department of Transportation has constructed 42 roundabouts on state roadways. An additional 36 are in the design phase, agency spokesperson Natalie Garrett told Indiana's CNHI newspapers. Saja said adoption has been slow because of the expense. The average U.S. roundabout costs about $2 million, but data collected over the years by officials in the central Indiana city of Carmel, with a nation-leading 150 roundabouts, shows they are safer than traditional intersections and reduce gasoline consumption. Since 1996, Carmel's population has soared from 30,000 to more than 100,000, city engineer Jeremy Cashman told CNHI. But the number of serious vehicle crashes is lower today despite the traffic growth. He said roundabouts have saved motorists 272 tanker trucks of gasoline annually due to less time spent idling at a traditional intersection, thereby reducing carbon dioxide's impact on the environment. We kind of joke here we worked so hard to be more than just a one-stoplight town, Cashman said. Now we're working really hard to become a one-stoplight town again. Carmel's well on its way. Fewer than 10 intersections with traffic lights remain in the city.
Collaboration will help fortify underpinnings of education. This article is written by Keith Gamble. Now that the 2024 legislative session is over, educators are curious about what the next session will bring. Legislators largely adhered to a more restrained approach, and some positive outcomes for retired and future educators emerged. House Enrolled Act 1004 offers a pragmatic solution to the pressing issue of financial security for retired educators. By enabling the Indiana Public Retirement System to devise long-term strategies for cost-of-living adjustments and granting a 13th check, this legislation acknowledges and honors the lifelong dedication of educators. HEA 1042 will help address the teacher shortage, which poses a significant threat to the quality of education. The legislation lays a pathway to attract and retain educators by allocating additional funds for transition to teaching scholarships. The session did present some challenges, most notably attempts to undermine teachers' ability to negotiate collectively. This directly threatens to intensify Indiana's teacher shortage. We must ensure every student learns from a caring and qualified educator, and that educators have a seat at the table to advocate for their students' futures, get the respect they're due, and earn the pay, benefits, and work schedules that enable them to support and care for loved ones and sustain long-lasting careers. The 2025 session presents an opportunity for meaningful change, particularly in how schools are funded and educators are paid. We must commit to all educators that they will have competitive salaries and benefits, as well as time off to care for a sick loved one or themselves. Implementing revamped high school diplomas and transitioning to the science of reading will demand a robust infrastructure supported by well-compensated and highly qualified teachers. ISTA stands ready to work with lawmakers to advocate for increased investment in our public schools. Adequate funding is the cornerstone of supporting the coming changes and ensuring that every Hoosier student has access to a high-quality public education. We must prioritize competitive salaries to attract and retain the professionals central to our public school success. We urge collaboration with all stakeholders to develop a comprehensive funding model that reflects the needs of our schools and the value of our educators. Addressing pay is not merely an investment in our workforce, but an investment in the future of Indiana's education system, ensuring the state can successfully implement changes while maintaining high educational standards. Together, we can rewrite the rules to reverse Indiana's educator shortage. We know every kid needs and deserves a neighborhood school with well-prepared educators, class sizes that allow one-on-one attention, and enough nurses, counselors, and healthy meals to ensure students can thrive. We also know short-term gimmicks and lowering standards won't fix the underlying problems we can and must solve so kids get the quality education they need. Educators, parents, and communities are coming together and demanding long-term solutions to long-term problems. Together, we can build a state where all students have the support they need to succeed, regardless of race, background, or zip code.
Mary will now read primetime TV listings for Tuesday, April 16th.
Tonight on CBS at 8 is FBI. At 9 o'clock on CBS is FBI International. And at 10 is FBI Most Wanted. On ABC tonight at 8 is Will Trent. At 9 is The Rookie. And at 10 o'clock on ABC is The Good Doctor. Tonight on NBC at 8 and 8:30 is Lopez versus Lopez. At 9 is The Weakest Link. And on NBC at 10 is Password. Tonight on PBS at 8 is Finding Your Roots. At 9 o'clock is Julius Caesar, Making of a Dictator. And at 10 o'clock is Frontline. On Fox tonight at 8 is The Cleaning Lady. At 9 o'clock is Alert, Missing Persons Unit. And at 10 o'clock is Fox 55 News, First at 10.
We're going to read a few local sport highlights next, but if you love sports, tune in Mondays at 1:30 and 10:30 p.m. and Tuesdays at 6 a.m. for Spotlight on Sports with stories from Sports Illustrated magazine. Or tune in every Sunday afternoon at 4:30 p.m. and Monday mornings at 6 a.m. and listen to a full hour of the past week's local, regional, and national sports stories during Sports in Review. And now we'll read a few highlights from several local sports stories for you, starting with Young Comets Think Future is Bright by Justin A. Cohn of the Journal Gazette. The Comets used a whopping 25 rookies this season, and it wasn't unusual for them to have 12 or so in the lineup on any given night. So while a significant portion of the fan base is unenthusiastic about the result, the Comets missing the playoffs for only the 10th time in their 72-year history, team and MVP Jack Dugan believes the young team made strides and the pieces are in place for success. "I think a lot of people were harsh about our team for a lot of the wrong reasons," said Dugan, who became the eighth Comets player to lead a league in assists. He had 60 and was fifth in ECHL points. Jesse Kalecki, in his first season as coach, led the Comets to a 35-30-7 record with 77 points, which was actually one win and 2 points better than the team's record under Ben Boudreau in 2022-23. But under Kalecki, the Comets finished fifth in the Central Division and missed the postseason for the first time since 2013 and the second time since 2002. The season closed with a 4-3 loss to the first-place Toledo Walleye on Sunday at Memorial Coliseum. Sean Sidlowski, who scored Sunday in likely his last game over 10 seasons with the Comets, said once the young players get a full grasp of what it takes to succeed through the grueling ECHL season, their games will take off. "It's hard when you're young," he said, "especially if it's the first year of a pro contract. You want the best for yourself, and you have to be selfish a bit in this game, and you want to move up and get to the NHL. I get that, and I respect that. But they'll come to see that when you win together, more individuals get more out of that than just one guy having a great year. It's something they've got to learn, and I'm sure they will. I don't think they'll want to come back and have a year like this again.
Redemption for men's winner, repeat for women's in Boston. Cisse Lema scorched the first half of the Boston Marathon course on Monday, setting a record pace to build a lead of more than half a mile. Then the weather heated up, and the 34-year-old Ethiopian slowed down. After running alone for most of the morning, Lema held on down Boston Street to finish in 2 hours, 6 minutes, 17 seconds, the 10th fastest time in the race's 128-year history. Lema dropped to the pavement and rolled onto his back, smiling, after crossing the finish line. Helen Obiri defended her title, outkicking Sharon Lodecki on Boston Street to finish in 2 hours, 27 minutes, 37 seconds, and win by 8 seconds. 2-time Boston champion Edna Kiglaplat completed the Kenyan sweep, finishing another 36 seconds back. Obiri also won New York last fall and is among the favorites for the Paris Olympics. She is the 6th woman to win back-to-back in Boston and the first since Catherine Nabera won 4 in 6 years from 2000 to 2005. The otherwise sleepy New England town of Hopkinton celebrated its 100th anniversary as the starting line for the world's oldest and most prestigious marathon, sending off a field of 17 former champions and nearly 30,000 other runners on its way. Near the finish on Boston Street, 26.2 miles away, officials observed the anniversary of the 2013 bombing that killed 3 and wounded hundreds more. Sunny skies and minimal wind greeted the runners, with temperatures in the 40s as they gathered in Hopkinton, rising to 69 as the stragglers crossed the finish line in the afternoon. "We couldn't ask for a better day," former New England Patriots tight end Rob Gronkowski, the Grand Marshal, said. "The city of Boston always comes out to support, no matter the event."
Fever make it official. Clark number 1. Superstar Iowa guard Indiana's second straight top overall pick by Doug Feinberg of the Associated Press, Dateline New York. Caitlin Clark admitted she was a bit nervous before being chosen with the number 1 pick in the WNBA draft by the Indiana Fever, even though it was no surprise. "I dreamed of this moment since I was in second grade, and it's taken a lot of hard work, a lot of ups and downs, but more than anything, just trying to soak it in," Clark said. The former Iowa star became a household name among basketball fans during her record-breaking college career, and she will now try and help revive the Indiana franchise along with last season's number 1 pick, Aliyah Boston, who previously played with Clark on a USA Basketball under-19 team. Clark has helped bring millions of fans to the women's game with her signature shots from the midcourt logo and passing ability. The NCAA's all-time scoring leader was a big reason why a record 18.9 million viewers tuned in to the national championship game, which Iowa lost to unbeaten South Carolina. The Hawkeyes were also the national runners-up to LSU a year earlier. It's been a whirlwind few weeks for Clark. After the title game, she flew to Los Angeles to receive the John R. Wooden Award and then came to New York for an appearance on Saturday Night Live. Indiana followed up its splash pick of Clark by picking Ohio State point guard Celeste Taylor with the 3rd pick of the 2nd round, number 15 overall. They took another point guard in round 3 in Florida's Leilani Correa. Indiana star Mackenzie Holmes was selected just before Korea by the Seattle Storm. This concludes the reading of the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette. This morning's reading of the journal will repeat later today at 6 p.m. Today, Tuesday, April 16th, we're sending birthday greetings to volunteer Julie G., who reads the Smithsonian. We're sure there are other birthdays out there today as well, and if it is your birthday, we wish you a happy day too. Your readers today have been Anita with
Mary.
We invite you to stay tuned for the next program.